Welcome, everyone, to our latest edition of BAMS Radio. Now, we are a little bit later this week because of the Labor Day holiday. We are a day later, but we certainly are going to rehash Alabama's ultra-impressive first season opening win, and I thought it really was impressive. I thought Alabama, and there was a couple of rough spots, but I thought 55-0 over a pretty good Utah State football team was extremely impressive by Nick Saban in Alabama, as this was already, hard to believe, the 16th season opener for Coach Saban. But we're going to discuss it for the next hour, as we always do on BAMS Radio, and we're going to do so with our two experts and two great compatriots of mine, and that's Thomas the Wizard Watts in the Port City of Mobile. He's, of course, producing this show, keeping us on the air, and, of course, doing a great job, as always, giving his statistical analysis and his takes on the game. And, of course, from 89 to 93, a national champion, William Redfish Barger, put on the uniform, always has interesting takes on the University of Alabama and Intel, and he is going to give us his thoughts as well. And we're looking forward to some outstanding Crimson Tide conversation over the next hour. But 55-0, Alabama wins. Just enough for them to work on in a first game before they head to Steve Sarkisian's new stomping grounds, his second year at Texas. And that's going to be an interesting 11 a.m. kickoff. Already speculation about 95-degree temperatures on Fox next week. And we'll talk a little bit about Texas as well. But we're going to discuss first what we saw on Saturday. And I was in Bryant-Denny Stadium, and I know Thomas and William are watching as well. And we're going to get their thoughts now. William, welcome back to BAMS Radio. It's another season underway. Your initial thoughts on what you saw from Alabama in that 55-0 win?
Well, I mean, I think for a, week one opener, I thought there was a lot of good things. There's still some things that need to be improved and worked on. But, I don't know if we're going to have a true handle for what kind of team this actually is until, probably those back-to-back games against Arkansas and Texas A&M. I think Texas has a good enough skill players, to put up a little bit of points on Alabama. But I just don't think they match up very well on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And I don't know, if that comes into play by halftime, the second half, but it's going to come into play at some point. But obviously, Texas isn't Utah State. This is a team that gave up, 250 yards and 6 yards per carry to the football powerhouse known as UConn last week. So, in a sense, I mean, I thought on offense, the skill players played extremely well. I'd give every one of those guys an A. I loved seeing all the running backs and the wide receivers get involved. Obviously, Prentice and Holden carried over, what all the scuttlebutt was that came out of the scrimmages in August into the first game. Bryce was phenomenal. But I still think there's some questions that need to be answered on the offensive line. I'd give them a B-, C-plus performance. I thought the run blocking against a really small, questionably athletic defensive front seven was very inconsistent at times. And to a lesser extent, I think there were multiple times that Bryce didn't have a real clean pocket to operate out of when he was passing. See the 100-yard scrambling. Those weren't designed quarterback runs. But all in all, I thought it was a great team performance. If you want to flip over to defense, they made it pretty painful early on for Utah State to get any momentum going. I know they had the one deep shot that they connected on the first drive, but it wasn't like the coverage was bad. It was just a good play on the ball by the wide receiver. But all in all, Drew, I mean, you might want to clean up a few things on special teams, get that punt protection shored up a little bit. But all in all, I thought it was a really solid, season opener for Alabama.
Yeah, I thought it was as well. I mean, certainly I didn't think the run blocking was super consistent, but I wanted you to kind of comment on this. You played at the University of Alabama, as we know, for 5 seasons, and I think a lot of times the run blocking is a work in progress. Usually, offensive lines have new pieces each year that, you know, usually you hardly ever return all 5 starters. And then we kind of saw a surprise, and we didn't know the reasoning behind it until after the game, but we didn't see Emil Ekior in the starting lineup at right guard. He had missed 5 days. We don't know why. The speculation would be COVID or a sickness or something of that nature because of Coach Saban saying he didn't practice for much of the last 5 days. But he, you know, we saw Kendall Randolph at right guard. We saw Javian Cohen back in there at left guard. And then we saw, you know, Kendall moved to the left guard spot that we were expecting. Ekior came in, I think, near the end of the first quarter at right guard. And it seemed to, you know, be a move that sparked the offense even more. I thought the running game kind of came alive then. And personally, I agree with you. I certainly wish I could have, you know, predicted the future and known that Bryce would be the first Alabama football player to go for 100 yards this season, because I would have put every penny I have on it so I could have been rich. But I never would have thought that I'd see that because, again, we even lamented last year about how Bryce did not run a lot. And sometimes we thought he should use his mobility even more. And for the first time, we see him, and it was only 5 carries, but he certainly exploded, 5 rushes for 100 yards, and the touchdown, the last TD from 4 yards out. But I thought overall that, you know, it was still a really solid performance, no question about it. And again, I thought that Bryce did a really nice job of running the offense. He looked like he was in complete control. And the passing game he wasn't able to connect on the deep shots yet, but I think those are coming. And he just missed in one particular instance. I do remember he had, Jermaine Burton open by a couple of yards and missed him. But again, I think that's going to come. But I will say, William, to go back to it, though, usually to me, I've always felt like the running game and run blocking was something that gets better with repetition. How is that kind of how does that process work with an O-line when you go from like game one to game two and then, and so on?
Well, I mean, I think it'll certainly, you know, be a little bit more consistent, hopefully, you know, once they get, you know, the pieces settled into place as to how they're going to. Obviously, I think, you know, whether it was discipline, illness, you know, family emergency, whatever that caused Ekior to miss 5 days of practice. You know, once he's back in the starting lineup and whoever ends up being the, you know, the starting left guard, I mean, that'll help a little bit. But I mean, what you have to take into consideration here is what Utah State was doing to that front last night was exactly what all the teams that had success last year against Alabama's offense, you know, did to them. They were stunning. They were slanting. They were bringing blitzes. You know, this isn't the first time that bunch has seen it, and it's certainly probably going to be one of the least talented and athletic fronts to execute it against them. You know, that's why I'm saying let's wait and see, because, you know, Texas is going to have a better quality of athlete. You got Vanderbilt mixed in there and some other lower level team. But I've got the Arkansas Texas A&M circle back to back. I think that's what we're going to find out. You know, in my opinion, I think it affects the deep ball chemistry between the quarterback and the wide receivers, consistency more so than what you should have seen, you know, last night from that offensive line and, you know, from a run blocking standpoint. You know, if you take away Bryce's scrambling yards, it was nothing to write home about. I do think the running backs, you know, did an excellent job with what they had to work with. I mean, everybody got to see what Gibbs is capable of. You know, probably the best news to me was watching Jason Roydell, you know, look like there's no lingering after effects, you know, from their knee injuries from last year. You know, you got to see a little bit of Trey Sanders, got to see a little bit of Jamarion Miller, who I thought, had a nice outing for himself. But I mean, I think certainly when you start going around running back rooms in college football, I think Alabama's can stand up to anybody's. I think the Gibbs, Jace, Roydell, three-headed monster is going to be a difficult, prospect, especially if they, get as creative as they did last night in certain aspects with the screen game. And I thought that was a nice adjustment by Bill O'Brien. People bitched about that for the whole month of September last year when teams were, doing the stunning, slanting, blitzing packages to bottle things up. They're like, why can't he throw some screens? Well, he did that last night. So the hate mail must have been well received. And, they were effective at it. I think, to me right now, I would have to, in my mind, it's a two-headed monster for me between Jace and Gibbs. I think both of them are just so smooth as runners and vice versa as receivers out of the backfield. When you see, it was nice to see Isaiah Bond get in there.
Yeah.
As early as he did, he's a guy that you didn't hear much out of in fall camp. And, they've still got, whenever the foot injury is 100%, they've still got, Harrell they can add in there. Hopefully Latu can go Saturday versus Texas. So it's, still a lot of weapons on that offense and different ways that they can utilize them. But I certainly haven't heard anybody bitching and complaining about the play calling last night, which that's a welcome relief.
Yeah, that is. I thought it was a well-called game. I've always been a Bill O'Brien fan anyway, and you're right. I mean, when you think about it, Tyler Harrell, we didn't see him at all. We did not see Cam Latu. He, he dressed out but did not play. And then, and from what I understand, he practiced for most of the week in a black jersey. But I think he's going to be back for the Texas game. And so that'll be another, element of the offense. I did think Miles Kisselman did a nice job blocking and then did make a catch. So he had a nice debut. Robbie Oot struggled a little bit in the blocking aspect, but he'll be a situational player all year. I think he'll be more of a flex and then a fullback, and they'll use him down on the goal line to block even at times to run some routes and occupy a defender, and maybe probably be a decoy most times. But again, there's always going to be guys that struggle a little bit. It's probably the most Robbie's ever played. He's never really been a first team guy, but he was with the first team offense, throughout this game, no question about it. But like you said, and then you don't have Aaron Anderson either, who's still coming back from an injury. And so I think he could end up being a bigger part, of this offense, no doubt about it, or at least be able to play. And I guess you could also say we may be burying the lead, because once again, he caught the first ball. He had 5 catches for 60 yards. But Kobe Prentice looked like he had a really good feel for things. I really enjoyed watching him and the way he worked. Now, he did have one drop, and I thought that was would have been a nice play, probably a first down. I thought it was probably one of the only real mistakes that was glaring from the receiver group. But, of course, he is a young player. And then Trayshawn Holden, I think you mentioned it at the beginning of the show. He came out and – what he did in the last scrimmage continued, 5 catches, team high 70 yards, a couple of TDs, and some glowing comments from Nick Saban, today in the press conference. So, because as everyone knows, we're, we're doing this a little later than usual. But, I mean, you just be impressed totally with, how he played and what he's been able to do. And I know I certainly was. And I think when you look at it, I think also another player that I was ultra impressed with as well, as far as the way he performed in his first game was Tyler Steen. I remember a guy that wasn't here, for a spring practice at all. And I really thought, William, go back to your point, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. Certainly, as you said, the running game is going to have to be more consistent. But I thought J.C. Latham and Tyler Steen both did a nice job in their first starts at right and left tackle, respectively, for that offensive line.
No, and I should have clarified that earlier. And look, I'm not trying to create some type of controversy that doesn't need to be discussed. Do I think what I saw last night was better than what I saw most of the time in 2021? Absolutely, I do. But you have to factor in who they were playing. But yes, I think J.C. Latham and Tyler Steen both did exceptionally well, and you know, in their first starts for Alabama, I should say, in Steen's case, you know, did good in pass pro. You know, I think J.C. Latham is a monster in the making. I think by mid-October, you know, there again, he's got to pass that test of the increased competition, but I don't think it's going to be a huge stretch for him because he's getting the best competition he's going to see all year, every day in practice. But I mean, that kid, you know, what he's done with his body, and Tyler Steen as well. You know, I don't know who he worked out with from the time he left Vanderbilt until the time he got to Tuscaloosa this summer. But if you go back and look at his pictures from last year at Vanderbilt to what he looks like now, you know, obviously that kid wants it. And I was pleased with both of those guys. Yeah, also too, another guy that we didn't really mention. And I think it was kind of be, you know, expected, but you know, because when he was healthy at Georgia, Jermaine Burton was a very good wide receiver. And you know, I think he carried that over into last night. You can tell he's already got good chemistry with Bryce. But that was something I should have clarified. I thought the miscues and the lack of push in the running game was more so on the interior of the offensive line versus, you know, trying to lay it at the feet of Steen and Latham.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think when you're rotating guys at guard the way they did, sometimes it's going to struggle. Though Darian Dalcourt had a really high grade from the coaching staff. No pressures, no busts, and he was named the SEC Offensive Lineman of the Week. So got to give him credit because a lot of people wrote him off after getting hurt last year and he struggled a little bit with his snaps. And so many thought Seth McLaughlin would be the starter. He was not. Dalcourt, I think, will be there all year as long as he's healthy. Certainly. And even Nick Saban said so after the game. And when he went on a depth chart rant, you know, and William kind of, you brought it up just a few minutes ago, the two guard slots will play themselves out. You know, I think Ekior will be the right guard, but it's probably just going to be a competition almost week to week between Kendall Randolph and Javian Cohen. So we'll see how that plays out, certainly. And I was glad to see Booker, Damian George, McLaughlin, certainly all those guys, the second unit, Amari Kite, and then Cohen with the second group as far as the O-line, because that needs to happen. You know, they've got to get reps. They've got to play. And so you want to get, and that was the thing that came out of this game. You got a chance, to play a lot of players, and that's what you want to do. And I didn't see anybody get hurt, like LSU, for example. The one thing you don't want to have, and they were the only team that embarrassed the league in the first week. You saw what Brian Kelly took over now. I've always said coaching matters, and I still think so. But when you're having to clean up a mess left by Ed Orgeron, you still got a lot of discipline issues on that team. They look terrible. Their kicking game was awful. It really lost the game for them. Jaden Daniels, to me, is a kind of a limited quarterback a little bit. And then Mason Smith, though, that's what I was going to talk about. He gets hurt on the first series and really just trying to celebrate with his team. So injuries can happen anytime. So anytime you can, get a lot of guys in, it's good. And I thought defensively they rotated a lot of guys on the D-line. Jaheim Otis, I thought he played well for his first game. He was in there, I think, by the third series. They played at least six guys up front. And then they started playing the backups, but I thought they were rotating them with the ones. And then I thought, you know, Will Anderson was Will Anderson. He didn't have any sacks, but, you know, and Sark will probably do the same thing. But, you know, when you saw what Utah State was doing, they were trying to get rid of the ball quickly. And then I knew they would test Alabama's corners. First play of the game, they certainly victimized Terrion Arnold, but I thought he bounced back well. And then we saw all four of those guys play extensively. We saw Eli Ricks. We saw Kyrie Jackson, who probably had the hit of the game during the game as well. So I thought all four of them did pretty well for themselves. Kool-Aid seemed to hold up really well. And he had a couple of nice punt returns as well, and he had ball security. So I thought defensively, really, there wasn't too much you could complain about. And William, I thought it was big. Certainly probably the most glaring mistake in the game was Alabama special teams giving up the block punt. I mean, you can't do that against a quality opponent. Certainly, Jeff Banks and Texas are going to be watching that film, trying to victimize Alabama. But I thought the defense responded, all those backups that got in. We did see Brian Branch and Malachi Moore with those guys some, and even Jalen Moody. But I thought the backups played with a lot of pride, and it was good to see them still get the shutout and still, and keep the Aggies out of the end zone. And I'll give credit to Blake Anderson. He wouldn't be like some coaches that I've watched in Bryant-Denny Stadium, who, of course, would just settle for a field goal just so they could say they didn't get shut out. He just wanted he played a bunch of his guys, three quarterbacks, and just wanted them to try to score a touchdown. And they weren't able to execute it, but he knew they were overmatched, but he tried to get some guys some experience as well. But I just thought Alabama being able to go down to that second and third team, there's certainly a drop off somewhat with the second group, but you can still see the talent. And to me, the more you can play younger players, the better. That's the one thing I'll give Kirby Smart credit for. We saw it with Georgia and the way they just eviscerated the overrated Oregon Ducks is. He played a lot of guys even last year, and we haven't seen Georgia drop off much defensively because of how many guys they played. And I hope Coach Saban, as his career, continues at Alabama, starts doing the same thing, because when you get in these games where you're hammering these people, you need to play as many guys as you can. And Coach Saban said that in the post game. He basically said, we played a lot of guys. I wish we could have played more, but I was happy to see, especially a lot of those young defensive guys get in, William.
Yeah, and I'm gonna circle back around with the way you started the conversation. I don't doubt Brian Kelly's X's and O's competency.
Right.
But I still question whether he's the right guy from a cultural standpoint. There's a lot of discipline and dedication that's going to have to be bought into. I thought their offensive line was a fat, sloppy mess. Probably the most in-shape one was the true freshman, Will Campbell. He just hasn't been down there long enough to pick up the bad habits yet. But that's my biggest question with Brian Kelly is, he's never recruited in a highly competitive and sometimes just filthy environment like recruiting is in the Southeast. We'll see how that pans out for him. But that was just, when you look at I think Greg McElroy put it best last night. The targeting call on Gay was one of the worst, most obvious ones I've seen in a long time. You can just tell that team just still doesn't have the discipline it's going to take to be a championship caliber team. And, probably not, the talent at certain positions. I do think they're probably going to have to, like you said, Drew, look at a different quarterback. And along those same lines, two guys that I should have mentioned earlier when I was talking about Tyler Steen's body transformation on the second team offensive line for Alabama. I think Tyler Booker and Damian George can be thrown into that boat as well. Tyler Booker's lost all of his baby fat and a little bit of a, thick waist that he had. And Damian George has really streamlined his body. Obviously couldn't really tell last night with the way the game was when they came in. His big struggle last year was in pass protection. Didn't get to see a lot of that versus good competition. But certainly, at least on the hoof, looks like a different player than he did last year. As far as the defense, when an offense is doing, and that's why I think what makes, what Will Anderson has done throughout his short career and what Dallas Turner did last year, you know, against these offenses and quarterbacks that get the ball out of their hands so fast, you know, that makes it much more difficult to put a quarterback on the ground. And I love seeing how, you know, all the DBs that got to play. Yeah, I thought it was a very clean. I thought Timmy Smith, you know, flashed several times at defensive tackle to go along with the ones that you've already mentioned. And you know, a guy that, you know, I think, you know, the fan base and certainly even based on the depth chart going into this game, it's drawn some criticism. I thought yesterday might have been the best game I've seen Justin Obogie play. You know, he was very consistent, disruptive. But to me, I felt like the best thing that I saw on defense was all those corners getting in and getting reps, you know, getting some experience under their belt. You know, I thought based on, you know, the practice reports and how he's kind of, you know, quote unquote, struggled with the playbook, I thought Ricks played very physical and, you know, kind of established a presence out there. So on the defensive side of the football, I mean, I really think it was, you know, they treated an overmatched, less talented team the way they should have been treated.
Yeah, I think they did too, no doubt about it. I think they handled it in a very professional way. I thought it showed good internal leadership. I didn't think Alabama was focused on Texas at all. I thought they were focused on the task at hand of eviscerating, you know, Utah State. And I picked 52-3, so I thought we were going to see this kind of beat down. And I know, Thomas, you did as well. You predicted this was going to be an ugly game. We're going to bring you into the conversation. What are the areas that stood out to you as you watched this game as Alabama took apart Utah State?
So from when I look at these games, I look at where the drop-off happens. The first team was great all over the place. I completely understand the notion of this offensive line has to come together, but I always flash, and I'm going to use William's words against him, that and that 2012 Western Kentucky game where Alabama's offensive line gave up an absolute ocean of sacks.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying that this offensive line is going to be that offensive line. I'm not going quite that far. But it is a work in progress, but I think that's going to at least evolve into something where you're not, like, throwing drinks at televisions, you know, halfway through a football game. So, you know, that was kind of an expectation. But still, Alabama scored on 9 straight drives. I can't remember that happening. I mean, I realize the 2020 offense was insanely special, but the thing that really jumped out to me, though, Drew, was Alabama's defensive performance. We've said on this program multiple times, when it comes to the Pete Golding-led Alabama defenses, they're slow to start. They struggle to put it together for a little while. And then about halfway through the season, they really, really pick it up and they get much, much better. I would argue that Alabama's defense was at least in the same realm as Georgia's by the end of last season. And we know how well Georgia's defense was thought of. So this defense didn't start slow. It started extremely fast. I mean, I'm looking at the stats right now. Utah State had 136 total yards, and only 57 of those were passing yards, and over, like, and what, like three-fifths of them were on one long play. I don't know what else you can ask for this Alabama football team. It's something that, yes, Alabama's going to get better. Yes, there's some things that you have to get cleaned up. You know, you've already talked about the special teams, the deep ball, and then the offensive line continuing to gel. But having said all of that, this is one of the more complete games that Alabama has played in recent memory. I realize it was an extraordinarily overmatched opponent, but Alabama did what they should have done. They went out, and by, you know, halfway through the second quarter, the game was completely over. And there weren't these weird mental lapses from anybody on the first unit. And so onward to Texas, which I think Texas is going to be an interesting one because I think Sarkisian really, really knows what he's about in terms of offensive game planning, but does Texas have the horses where it matters to go shot for shot with this Alabama team? I have serious doubts. But, you know, coming out of this first game, Drew, I can't get upset with how Alabama looked, particularly when it was the ones out there. So I think that this team's ceiling is still very, very high. And it's not wholesale changes that need to be made. It's little tweaks. And a lot of those little tweaks are just going to come with in-season repetitions. So I think it's worth it to be very excited based on what we saw this past weekend in Tuscaloosa, Drew.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there's no question about that. I would agree. You know, I think when you look at it, offensively to me, I think I would say the MVP was Bryce Young. I think he, you know, whenever you rush for 100 and a touchdown and you throw five, most of them were red zone TDs, but they were very efficient in the red zone. You know, Alabama had to settle for a couple of field goals, but in a way that's good because Will Reichert looked like a machine. I mean, he was 10 for 10 on kickoffs where they weren't returned. And then he did his job and then he kicked a 45 yard field goal. And then I believe a 33 yarder. So he did his job with the kicking game. And I think also, you know, William brought it up. Trayshawn looked really good. And then I'd say the unsung heroes offensively were how smooth Gibbs and Jace McClellan looked. Jace didn't get a ton of touches, but he scored two touchdowns on both of his catches. And that's something we've reiterated in the offseason was how big a loss Jace was during the season last year because of the myriad of different things he can do. And while I like Roydell Williams, I really do. And while I like, Trey Sanders, there's a drop off from those two to, you know, from the top two guys. I mean, I think one and two, and literally number one and number two, Jace McClellan and Jahmyr Gibbs, are as good a combination as there is in the country. I'm going to be anxious to see as the season wears on, you know, how Alabama, gets JoJo Earl back in this lineup, Aaron Anderson, Tyler Harrell, you know, and certainly we've already mentioned Latu. So that's four weapons they didn't have to use. But I'm glad because it allows them to create depth offensively as well. I'll go back to Kobe Prentice and what he did. William brought up a great point about Isaiah Bond. And, you know, and I'll go back to my other negative. I know he was 9 for 11, and I'm talking about Jalen Milroe. But the deep ball, I don't think he has the arm to stretch defenses in the SEC. Because Bond would have been gone for a touchdown. He was 3 yards behind the guy, and it was like a punt, and it was intercepted. And he did make some good throws now. I'm not saying he didn't, but I think we all understand that if he had to start, God forbid, Bryce Young gets injured, they're going to have to run a zone read type scheme. He did do some good things with his legs, but they take away a lot of the RPOs and the short stuff, and you're going to have to be able to stretch the field. And I'm just not sure that Jalen Milroe can do that. I think he's improved, in his 2 years at Alabama, certainly with his reads. And at times he does make wild throws, but then he makes hospital throws because he got Kendrick Law jacked up on a 3rd and 5, and it was a 4 yard route and catch because of the way he threw the ball late. So I know he's a young player, but I'm just saying, we didn't see much of Ty Simpson. He took over in the middle of a series, and he had one good throw. I still think Ty's the future, but I still wouldn't mind seeing Milroe used at times in a specialty role. We'll have to wait and see if that happens. And they certainly weren't going to show it against Utah State. But I do think, though, this Utah State team is a bowl team. I would agree with William. They're totally overmatched, and I agree with you as well. I'm not going to say that they're going to win 11 like they did last year and they beat a couple of Pac-12 teams. And by the way, the Pac-12 sucks. I said it and I'll say it again because the Gators, who I think are an 8-4 team, beat the supposed best team in their league. So I don't think the Pac-12 is very good. I'm not even sure USC is. But I mean, I'll say that. But I just I do think that that Alabama needs Bryce Young to be healthy, no question about it, because these other two quarterbacks don't have a lot of experience. But again, I just thought offensively, probably besides the running game, the run blocking being more consistent, I still was a little worried about Milroe because of the lack of the deep ball. But I did like the fact that they got Law in, they got Bond in, they got Prentice. They're playing these freshman receivers, certainly. And I think that that bodes well for the future, because we didn't see Tyu Jones-Bell. He's been a little banged up, but he's probably going to get passed on the depth chart anyway. But again, I think right now, while they may not have the Devontae Smiths of the right now, or the Jerry Judy's, or the Henry Ruggs, or a Jalen Waddle, I think they're very, very solid. And I, you know, and I'll take what Trayshawn Holden did all day. But if he does this the rest of the year, this will mean he's probably going to be an all-SEC type receiver. And that just goes to show you, William, that Trayshawn was playing in front of a, or excuse me, behind a lot of really good football players. And plus, I get kind of tired of the mantra that I hear from people talking about Holman Wiggins doesn't develop talent. They act like damn Devontae Smith came out of Louisiana not 140 pounds and that he was already a damn All-American wide receiver. All these dudes, Jerry Jeudy included, Ruggs, Waddle, they all had to be developed. And I still think, much like Billy Napier was kind of poo-pooed, they're poo-pooing Wiggins sometimes. And I think Holman Wiggins has done a nice job at Alabama.
Can I jump in? I'm gonna bash some fans here. Alabama fans are spoiled brats in many cases, and there is a segment of Alabama's fan base that if you gave them a steak dinner, they'd be pissed you didn't include a lobster tail. That's how they act with this team, and it's like, guys, okay, you think this is bad? You think this is bad? Look at what Alabama might get into after Nick Saban goes away. Because he's not a cyborg, at least not yet. And but yeah, go ahead, William. I'm sorry, I just had to jump in with that.
No.
The coach criticism just sets me off sometimes.
Well, I mean, you're making me feel guilty here for wanting a little surf with my turf when I go to a restaurant.
Well, you're successful enough; you could pay for it, but you know.
But no, I was going to go back to what Thomas was saying. I'm certainly not trying to turn this into the 2012 debacle versus Western Kentucky. And I'm just basically piggybacking off of what I saw and what Coach Saban put out in the media today. You know, he was quoted as saying that the run blocking was inconsistent. And that's, you know, maybe I'm taking it one step further. I don't know. But that's basically all I'm saying. And, you know, I'm not trying to say it was Western Kentucky at all. I mean, that was a seven-sack performance. Five of them were given up by one Danny Jesus Fluker. But that was against a guy that played 4 or 5 years in the NFL and was a third or a fourth-round draft pick. Obviously, the pass protection wasn't a huge issue last night. I just thought versus a front seven that probably didn't average 250 pounds, you would have seen a little bit more bullying going on. But no, going back to Wiggins for a minute, I mean, I think he's done a great job. I mean, you know, since that, you know, that slew of wide receivers, you know, and I think there were some, you know, there's been some misses, just like there's been some misses on the offensive line and everywhere else in recruiting. You know, one of them's basically fixing the flame out at Texas. Like Drew mentioned, there's some guys that are getting passed on the, you know, the depth chart probably with this infusion of young players. But no, last year's recruiting class from a wide receiver standpoint was one of the better overall classes of a position that I think Nick Saban has brought in. You know, I think he's got a chance this year. You know, depending how he finishes from top to bottom, this has a chance to be possibly his best overall class, you know, with the way things are going right now in recruiting. That's still to be determined. But no, I mean, it's just to you know, because I think, Drew, you've got two different segments of the Alabama fan base, and I'm at the age where I kind of fall in between both of them. You know, you've got the ones that are, parents' age, you know, that lived through the Bryant years. And then you've got the ones that are, you know, late 20s to probably 40 now, that have lived through the Nick Saban era. But no, I remember the Mike years. You know, I remember watching games being given away. I remember, you know, the honk if you sack Brody game. So, you know, I'm not going to ever be overly critical because I know how hard it is on a week-to-week basis to maintain a standard and maintain a level of performance. But, you know, you need to kind of, you know, especially when you're being critical of a coach, the head guy or the position coaches, you know, look at the overall body of work, not just one recruiting class. You know, there again, you know, they wouldn't have brought Tyler Steen in from Vanderbilt if there hadn't been several misses at the offensive tackle position with some bad evaluations coming out of high school. So, you know, it happens to the best of them, and it can happen to the greatest of all time from time to time. But, you know, certainly from a consistency standpoint, it doesn't happen very often.
Well, and I was going to go back to Thomas. Yeah.
One more thing on the coaches stuff, and this is really the problem I have. Okay, so let's say Holman Wiggins ain't it. Just I'll accept your premise as valid. But the follow-on question is, who else do you want to get? Outside of, like, who's been better in college football outside of Brian Hartline at Ohio State? And he's not coming to Alabama. That is, no, that just bury that thought. And so that's really the problem. Is Holman Wiggins perfect? No, but he's one of the cleanest dirty shirts in the room. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But go ahead, Drew. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to get you in our last few minutes of this. I was going to get you and William's thoughts. You first, Thomas, on Texas. They win 52-10 over a future Alabama opponent in a couple weeks. That's Terry Bowden and Louisiana Monroe, 52-10. We saw Quinn Ewers. You know, he gets his first start, 16-24, 225, two touchdowns and a pick. Hudson Card played in mop-up duty, 4-5 for 24 yards. But the triumvirate for Alabama to stop, obviously, is Bijan Robinson. He had 10 rushes for 71 and a touchdown. You know, long carry of 21 yards. He was a great player last year, over 1,000 yards. And then, of course, Xavier Worthy, who didn't touch the ball nearly as much as he's probably going to be slated to against Alabama. And he also returns kicks, as we've already said. So Xavier Worthy is a guy Alabama wanted. He's a very explosive athlete. And then they had, their tight end, Jatavion Sanders, sophomore from Denton, Texas. He had 85 yards receiving. And we know Sark likes to include the tight end. He did at Alabama quite a bit. But I go back, though, to what William said at the start of the show. I think it's a mismatch on the lines of scrimmage. I don't think Texas is still really good on the O-line or D-line, and they're not going to have Alfred Collins. We now know Jaleel Worthless, a.k.a. Jaleel Billingsley, has been suspended. What we believe is for an NCAA-related drug test failure. At least that's what I'm strongly hinting at. For the six games, he's been suspended from his time at Alabama. And then Najai Hall, I know he was on the sidelines but did not play in the last game. Wouldn't be shocked if he does not play in this one either. But first, Thomas, I'll get your thoughts, your initial thoughts on Texas and what we may see. I'm predicting 48-13. I think this is still a mismatch. And I think this Alabama team has been waiting on this showcase to go to Texas and to show the world how good they are. But your thoughts on seeing the Alabama's old offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, and Kyle Flood, Jeff Banks, and A.J. Milwee, and all these guys that were closely connected with Alabama football.
So the line in this game is Alabama by 20, and the over-under is 62. That means Vegas sees 41-21 kind of game. I could buy that. I think that Steve Sarkisian is good enough as an offensive mind to put stress on the Alabama defense. But honestly, yeah. Drew, you did steal most of my thunder. And I mean this, you know, this is very just ribbing you. if you look at what Texas has to fix, it's all in the trenches. And if you look at the Texas recruiting class, you look at the activity in the transfer portal and other things, it's all about trying to get the lines of scrimmage better. And honestly, if this game was the first week of November, I think Texas has a much better shot, because but there's still a lot of pieces and parts that are moving around on those offensive lines, on the lines that they just they haven't played much at Texas. So when that is the reality, you're going to have to figure out what to do with Will Anderson. You're going to have to figure out what you do with Dallas Turner. The interior defensive line was not bad. I realize it was against Utah State, so let's pump the brakes before we're saying, you know, we have Quinnen Williams 2.0 coming over. But that's where the game's going to be lost. And really, here's going to be the thing that jumps out to me. Texas has been a very Bijan Robinson forward team. Bijan Robinson was heavily leaned on throughout last year, and he was great for the Texas Longhorns. But what happens if he gets bottled up? Utah State averaged 2.7 yards per carry, and I bet if you had some fun with math, it was even worse when it was ones-on-ones. So, you know, what happens when that part of the Texas offense is completely stymied and Quinn Ewers, who is probably going to be a really good quarterback, is told, throw on a secondary that's as good as any you've seen, period, including when you were at Ohio State. That's really where I think the game starts to break down, and that's where I think Texas is really going to struggle. I don't particularly care that it'll be 95 degrees in Austin, Texas. I'll be at the game, so I'll be sweating.
There you go.
But I don't think that's going to bother this Alabama Crimson Tide team. Anybody who has ever been to Tuscaloosa before, like, October 1st and after, like, April 1st knows that Tuscaloosa is the hottest, wettest, coldest, driest place on earth. So that's not going to bother the team. And I think this could end up being a game where, you know, Texas is going to do some things that's going to present problems to the University of Alabama. They've got enough talent, particularly at the skill positions, to make it work. But I don't think they're going to be able to sustain for four quarters. I've got Alabama winning 45-17. They're going to cover, but it's not going to be as, you know, as brutal as this previous game. And it's absolutely could be one of those things where how do you get, you know, a 49-3 like what Georgia did to Oregon? You get that by if Quinn Ewers blinks against a very good Crimson Tide defense and the game gets out of hand before Texas even gets going. Because that's really what happened when Georgia played Oregon. You know, Bo Nix was able to move the ball a little on that Georgia defense, but too many critical mistakes, and then the avalanche happened and the game was over. If something like that happens against Texas, we'll see. But I really think Alabama is going to win based on particularly the strength of the defensive line. And that's going to really, really tell where Alabama is going to be able to lean on the Texas defense itself. And because of that, I expect Alabama to come away with a victory. And, you know, programming note, since I'm going to Texas, we're going to have to do BAMS a little bit later again. But I'll keep that up with the BAMS Radio Twitter account.
Well, we appreciate that, and I hope you have safe travels to Austin. I'm certainly going to be watching it in front of my buddy's 86-inch TV, and I'm sure William's going to be watching on TV as well. So, William, your thoughts on the matchup? I know you like Alabama in this game. Sark certainly knows Alabama's personnel, and I was surprised he kind of let the cat out of the bag today to the media and said that the game plan was done 3 months ago. I don't know if I would have let, you know, that cat out, because that's kind of bulletin board material for Alabama. But your thoughts about this matchup?
Well, I mean, I've got two comments on something that you and Thomas said on separate issues. I mean, A, Drew, are you actually going to fail to mention the biggest Bammer assistant boogeyman of all time that works for Texas now? in one Bo Davis.
Yeah, Bo Davis. I didn't even mention Bo. You're right about that.
And then Thomas. I don't know if Quinn Ewers was in Columbus, Ohio, long enough to even get his $85,000 pickup truck's oil changed.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
So, but no, I totally agree with what both of y'all said, and you know, whether it's 48-13, 48-17, I think that's pretty damn close to where this game's going to fall. And, you know, I'll just say this. If I was Sark sometime in the first two drives, you know, I'd dial up a wheel route to Mr. Robinson and see if Pete and Moody and Toa Toa have learned how to cover a wheel route. But that's really, you know, and I haven't gotten to see them play this year yet, but I mean, that's basically what you're looking at. They've got a really good young quarterback that's not seen what he's fixing to see Saturday. I do think their running back and their, you know, their one wide receiver Worthy's as good as, you know, anybody at those positions in college football. You know, especially when you consider what Bijan has done behind a less than stellar offensive line throughout his career at Texas. But, and again, I don't think the heat's going to be a factor for Alabama. They've been tortured in it all summer. You know, you've got the fan base worked up into a foamed lather because there wasn't enough tickets provided for the $1 million band to go to this game. So that's going to be bitched about all week on the radio. But I just think, you know, where it counts, you know, Alabama's just better on both sides of the line of scrimmage. You know, it could come as early as the second quarter, I think, you know, when this thing starts to get away from Sark. But, you know, he's a good enough play caller where I do think he's going to, you know, put up a few points against Alabama. And again, you know, when you consider the environment, first game on the road, you know, we'll see how, you know, the Alabama offensive line performs against, you know, an uptick in competition. You know, obviously this isn't Texas A&M's front seven, but it's certainly going to be better than what they saw Saturday. But I don't think Alabama's going to, you know, struggle to put this game away, and it could be put away as early as halftime.
It was an interesting weekend because they did have a couple of official visitors, and Jalen Hale visited from Longview, Texas, and there's buzz that Alabama's leading, but he's still got to visit Texas next week, and they've been the preconceived favorite, but I think Alabama has, you know, turned up the heat on him. I think they'd really like to get him as the final wide receiver piece to the puzzle after they saw him in camp, and then he's also going to visit Texas A&M as well, so Jalen Hale is going to be a guy to watch. I know his father had a lot of good things to say, and Jalen's visited Alabama three times, and he'll get to see Alabama's offense against Texas this time. And certainly Alabama's playing a lot of young guys offensively, which I think has to kind of put a feather, you know, in their cap a little bit. And then, as we said, Alabama had a basketball official visitor as well, and that is Davin Cosby from Word of God in North Carolina. He's got, you know, Alabama in his top four, and so we're going to monitor that as well. And he's going to make his decision in the next few weeks, but he's still got to go on another visit or two because he had Alabama was probably about the third visit that he has gone on. So Bama, Virginia, and Tennessee, along with Wake Forest, is probably his top four, and he's still going to try to you know, visit NC State as well. So we'll have to kind of monitor that basketball situation, but certainly. They ended up with, you know, some younger prospects visiting as well for as far as the football side goes. But I usually just focus on the 2023 kids, and Hale was the one to focus on from Longview. And so it'll be interesting to see if Alabama continues to keep a lead with that kid, certainly. But and we'll monitor that. But, you know, I will say I think, I'm anxious to see how this Alabama team takes, you know, this road trip. It's an 11 a.m. kick. I'm still very, very impressed with the internal leadership of this group. And I still think that Sark's got a ways to go with this Texas team and how talented they need to be to compete with the likes of an Alabama. And like I said, I know we all are pretty much on the same page. I'm going to stick with 48-13. I do think Sark will move the ball on Alabama and cash in, maybe on a touchdown drive and a couple of field goals is the way I've got it. But I still think Alabama defensively, with their experience and with Pete Golding, you know, see, people aren't talking about this. Well, you know, certainly Sark knows Alabama, but Alabama knows Sark. And so I think the talent differential is going to play a big part in this. And Alabama's veteran coaching staff, and certainly Bill O'Brien, with the, being an, another year in the, with this offense. And I'm anxious to see how Eric Wolford's offensive line improves from game one to game two. But certainly, I like Alabama quite a bit in this game, and I think you know, I think they're going to play well, and they're going to march on, and then we'll have Louisiana Monroe and then Vanderbilt before we'll finally get to what William talked about, and that's going into the second month, and you've got back-to-back Arkansas and Texas A&M. And William, I'll say this. I didn't get to see a lot of it in the press box at Bryant-Denny Stadium, but I saw some of the game. I thought Cincinnati still had a really good football team under Luke Fickell, though they lost a lot of talent. And I thought that was a really good win for Arkansas to find a way to outlast a Cincinnati team and a coach in Luke Fickell that I think is one of the most underrated in the country.
Well, Uncle Luke gave the game away, Drew, since you didn't get to see the whole game. I mean, there was just tons of delay of games and, you know, they got into the red zone a couple of times and kind of penaltied their way from touchdown opportunities to field goals. But, you know, look, no doubt, I mean, Sam Pittman has done a tremendous job. I thought he, you know, kind of made his statement last year with some signature SEC wins. And, you know, they've got, I can't remember the guy's name, they've got one nasty-looking defensive tackle. They put a lot of pressure on Cincinnati's quarterback yesterday. You know, executed pretty well on offense. I'm still not as sold on the quarterback as a lot of people are. I think Alabama's got a chance to rattle him and get him out of rhythm. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's slimmed down a little bit. He looks like he's closer to 230 to me than 250 like he was last year. But, you know, you don't want to jump ahead from the big matchup. And I was just thinking, man, that's going to be an early wake-up call Saturday for the boys. I mean, they want to be at the stadium 4 hours before kickoff, which that's 7 a.m. So they're probably going to be getting woke up out of bed to eat the pregame meal at 5 a.m. So please don't stay up all night on the damn Xboxes and the PlayStations, because it's going to be an early kickoff. And, you know, as far as, you know, weather-wise, you know, a pretty rough morning from a heat standpoint.
It will be, but we certainly won't be having to get up at 5 a.m. to record BAMs. We'll be recording it a little later, as Thomas said, because he's going on this road trip. But we certainly were very impressed with Alabama's season opening win against Utah State, 55-0 win. And we will review this Alabama road trip, their first of the season to Austin, Texas, next week on BAMs Radio. And Thomas Watts will keep you up to date on the BAMs Twitter account as to when we will be publishing that episode. But we wish Thomas nothing but the best as far as travel. And for William Redfish Barger and Thomas the Wizard Watts, I'm Drew DeArmond. I hope you've enjoyed our review of Alabama as we give the Crimson Tide high marks for their win over the Utah State Aggies and Blake Anderson. But we will be reviewing Alabama's hopeful dominating win in Austin against Steve Sarkisian and the Texas Longhorns. But for everybody, we appreciate the continued support of BAMs Radio. And for Thomas the Wizard Watson, William Redfish Barger, I'm Drew DeArmond. Good night, everybody, and roll tide.